the Ten Commandments as they're recorded in Exodus chapter 20. And Darren is going to come and bring that to us.
This reading, timeline-wise, it's 2 months since Israel got out of Egypt and were led across the river. And they arrive in the wilderness at Sinai, and God takes them to the mountain. And that's where we land at the Ten Commandments. God brought everyone together, and then this is what has happened. Then God instructed the people as follows. I am the Lord your God, who rescued you from slavery in Egypt. Do not worship any other gods beside me. Do not make idols of any kind, whether in the shape of birds or animals or fish. I would add cars and bikes and things like that. You must never worship or bow down to them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, who will not share your affection with any other God. I do not leave unpunished the sins of those who hate me, but I punish the children for their sins of their parents to the third and fourth generations. But I lavish my love on those who love me and obey my commandments, even for 1,000 generations. Do not misuse the name of the Lord your God. The Lord will not let you go unpunished if you misuse his name. Remember to observe the Sabbath day, keeping it holy. 6 days a week are set apart for your daily duties and regular work. But the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any kind of work. This includes you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. Then he rested on the seventh day. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he set it apart as holy. One for Chris. Honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land of the Lord your God, that the Lord your God will give you. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not testify falsely against your neighbor. Do not covet your neighbor's house. Do not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female servant, ox or donkey, or anything else your neighbor owns. When the people heard the thunder and the loud blast of the horn, and then they saw the lightning and the smoke billowing from the mountain, they stood at a distance, trembling with fear. And they said to Moses, "You tell us what God says, and we will listen. But don't let God speak directly to us. If he does, we will die." "Don't be afraid," Moses said, "for God has come in this way to show you his awesome power. From now on, let your fear of him keep you from sinning." If I looked at any individual when I read any of those commandments, it was an accident. I was not implying you were committing adultery or anything.
So we cut the PowerPoint up, please. And there we are. It is actually something that brings a little bit of fear to us. Lord, don't speak to us like this. We don't mind things about love, but don't speak to us like this. Don't say these things to us, because they remind us of who we are. They remind us of what we can't do. They remind us of what's wrong. They remind us of restrictions and boundaries and thou shalt not. It really strikes a bit of fear into our hearts, or rebellion. Either way, Lord, not, no, keep your distance. Don't say it. And yet, these Ten Commandments, well, they give us the answer to that question, that great question that all religions, all philosophies have to answer, and that is, how should we live? By implications, how shouldn't we live? How should we live our lives? What is the right way to live ourselves? And what is the right way to live together? What are the moral choices that direct us, especially how to live together? It's the hard one. Any group that get together has to start working out rules, whether they're written down or spoken. You have to have your rules. People normally regulate behavior with one another with those agreed rules. In other words, if you want to be one of us, this is how you're going to have to behave. This is what you're going to have to avoid. And there are various ways we can do that. You can, with a small group, perhaps get agreement, but it's usual that it works more efficiently if you have a strong leader, even better if you have a dictator. And they will tell you what the rules are. And, well, if we disagree, there will be all sorts of consequences. Or, if we all disagree, we band together and we rebel and we overthrow them. Either way, we're going to find a way of having some rules to live together. Well, Jesus, when it came to rules, Jesus quoted a Jewish summary of the law that was popular at the time, a summary of all the rules from God, and he said this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. The law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. He's summarizing things. But what in particular is he summarizing? It could be the more contemporary Jewish understanding that all the laws of the Old Testament can be summarized in 613 key ones. In all likelihood, Jesus is having that as a summary of the Ten Commandments. But those Ten Commandments are particular ones. Whatever he's summarizing, it flows from those Ten Commandments. And many may disagree in the church as to how you implement those Ten Commandments. But nonetheless, that discussion, that thinking, that argument comes from and is centered on the Ten Commandments. So let's try and reclaim the Ten Commandments. Let's start off by thinking of a British citizenship test. Many countries have a citizenship test, which you must pass if you gain your citizenship in that country. If there was a British citizenship test that you had a part of setting, and you had to set a question on how we like to be treated, what sort of answers do you think are acceptable? How do British people like to be treated? Go on, what should the answers be? With respect? Queue properly, yes, absolutely. It's a yes. What else? How do we British people like to be treated? Sorry? Oh, we say please and thank you. Yeah, mind your P's and Q's, yes. Oh, well, yes, especially in a yes. We all like to be loved, yes, yeah, British people. What else? Justice, yes, very, very important. So perhaps we should say fairness. Everything should be fair. A couple of other things. Orderly manner, yes, so that queuing thing is coming back, is this popular. We got one more? Sorry? Jam on top. If it's just simply a slice of bread and jam on top, absolutely, yes, there's a practical side to that. Whatever it is, those things are what it means to be a citizen of this country. And the answers we would say are mandatory, things you have to understand. They're important because they set up a relationship with each other. They help us to gel together. They help things in sometimes very tense situations, at least they help us to understand how we ought to behave and what is acceptable, unacceptable. They build a relationship amongst citizens. And the Ten Commandments builds up a relationship among God's people. They do it by putting in boundaries, as most rules do. This is acceptable, this is not acceptable. Here are the boundaries. You go outside that and things go horribly wrong. Inside that, with God's boundaries, there is plenty of space for you and I to thrive. So it's not about restricting us, it's about liberating us. So let's look at the setting. The Ten Commandments. Well, their setting is, well, ask the question, how do we live with the one who always is? This isn't just about us with no God around, ignoring the question of the God. This is about us and God together. How do we live with the one who is? The one who's always there. The one who's above all, beyond us, and present with us. First of all, in the context of Exodus and the giving of the commandments, it's all about God being pleased to be near us. We don't need to worry about God wanting to actually keep us down, condemn us. God is pleased to be around us. In the light of that, how do we live? And for the people at the time, the Hebrew people, the people of Israel, there was the desire to keep that mountaintop experience. God with Moses and Moses bringing God down to the people and his teacher to the people. How can we sustain that when we go from this place, was their thinking. How do we live with that one who always is? The commandments don't set up the connection between people and God. Jesus does that. And Jesus did that and made that possible on the cross. And it's the cross which gives us the liberty. It's the cross which sets us free. It's the work of Jesus giving himself that makes it possible for us to be forgiven and renewed and set in his ways. The Ten Commandments help us to keep that going and keep that life flowing. So, as we look at the Ten Commandments, how we respond to the work of Jesus, we think, well, which of these commandments is going to be particularly important for us this morning to act on and to remember? What things might you need to change in response to the commandments? Let's run through them very quickly then. To live in the presence of the one who is. First of all, well, let's get to that first one. First four commandments. Let's remember, they are all about our relationship with God. And that's why they're often forgotten about. That's why they're often more difficult to recall. And you go straight on to the other one, more well-known ones that people quote, but not those first four. People will say sometimes, oh, we need to go back to the Ten Commandments. And they don't know the Ten Commandments. They don't understand them. Often they're people who don't have a Christian faith, but they'll say that. Now, first four are about our relationship with God. There's the first one. You're to have no other gods. And that's because our relationship with the God who always is an all or nothing relationship. Can't compromise on that. There is only one God. Therefore, you shall have only one God. By definition, there is no room for others and no room for compromise. I was asked by someone in Kingstainton once, would I do a Wiccan blessing? Wiccan being a pagan religion. Would I do that alongside my Christian stuff? Because I'm a religious person and therefore I would do all things religious. Surely, because that's the way we do things. We don't do anything in particular, do we? We're all things to all people. I do a Wiccan blessing. Yes, we pass that one by. There's only one God who is above all. You can't set profit above God and money above God or alongside God. There can only be one. And that applies to all areas of our lives. So, the next three are about how do we worship God. And so, you're not to make for yourselves any shaped image. Other religions do, other religions did at the time. There's no one comparable to God, so don't bring God down into our dimensions. The three dimensions of an object. Don't do it. Because once we do that, we brought God down to our size. Once we brought God down to our size, we will start to control God. And God will be like we want God to be. This is often the case nowadays, rather than God who God is. So we are to take God as one who can't be represented, and therefore our imaginations can soar to the greatness of God and appreciate how beyond things he is, how above things he is. It would be better sometimes if the church didn't represent God or godly things with anything physical. It would be good if maybe images of saints, even dare I say some images of Jesus, were not there, because it limits our understanding. Perhaps Jesus is the exception, because that was God taking human form. We have no idea what he looks like, and the Bible doesn't even try to describe him, other than he's male, and he's a Jew, and that's all we really know. The rest is by implication. We should not limit the size of God, and maybe churches should not even try to or attempt to do that. How do we worship? Well, you're not to employ the name of God for any empty purpose. That empty purpose could be, some would say, making an oath. Jesus said, "Let your yes be yes, and your no be no." That's all. You don't need to use God's name in an oath and belittle God like that. We should honor the name of God. Name of God is something that describes who he is. So, the God who always is, that name is Yahweh or Jehovah, the ancient name for God. And the Jewish people honored it so much, they never used to say it, unless they absolutely had to. The problem was, it became such a rule of never saying it, that they forgot how to pronounce it. And we have no idea how it's pronounced, other than it's something like Yahweh. It's all we know. How sad is that? That's taking it to extremes. We just honor the name of God. The names of God. You know some of the names of God in the Bible. Can you think of some now? God's name is. How's he described? Let's have a few. Jehovah's one. Counselor. Yes, God who is I am. A few more. Yes, mighty God. Can we get at least two more? You've had one before, that doesn't count. That's right, Everlasting Father, but we've still got to have two. Yes, King of Peace. Sorry? Wonderful Counselor, yes. Yes, so those names of God, who he is, we could have Good Shepherd, all sorts of other ones that we can bring in there, who God is and what he's like, and we honor him. So, how do we honor the name of God? Well, it's always remember, when we bring in God, bring in the name of God, make sure that we are doing honor to him. Some people try to say that God told me, bringing God in that context. God told me, God said that to me. Make sure that's true. It might be that God gave you the impression that, in which case, be honest. I think God gave me the impression that he said this. Don't just make what you're saying more forceful and more valid because you're just using the name of God to stamp that with. Use the name of God rightly and well. And as you worship, remember the Sabbath day. Make space for your relationship with God. Put it in there. Put it in your diary, God's saying, one day a week. Have a holiday one day a week. What a gift is that? Our God is a God of holidays. Now, we're told sometimes in families that you're to have quality time with your children. True. What we really need, if you have children, is to have time with your children. You need to have rubbish time as well. Boring times. You need to have times to argue and sort that out. You need to have times to cry together. You just need time together. Meal times are important, not for special meals, but for ordinary meals as well. Times where you do nothing but fall out about things, or you're just arguing about this, that, and the other, or you're being told off because you're not sitting up straight, or all those sorts of things. It's time together. And it's time within which we form the good things and we form the long-term good relationships. It comes out of it. It's time together, and we need it in a family, and we need it in the family of God, and we need it before the Lord our God. Time together. This is time together. This is regular time together. This is once every 7 days time together. And that's why church together every Sunday is important time together. It's important if you're feeling grumpy. It's important if you are bored because last week was boring. It's important if you're coming feeling like you don't want to be with people because you don't really like crowds. And they're not really your best friends, the people you're coming to see. It's important if that's how you're coming to church. It's important if you don't feel you have anything particular to contribute. Well, come along. Be along other people who aren't particularly looking forward to Sunday. Because there'll also within that be really important things happening, good relationships being built up, good time with God being built up, and times where, time to time, we really connect with the Lord and say, that was wonderful. Whether you sing or not, whether you listen well or not, in all of that, there is time when you connect with God. If you don't, you will probably have no time. It will probably trickle down and down and down. Well, you might listen to a nice record on your playlist, which is worship record, and it lifts you. It may be, but it's going to be you on your own, and it's going to be occasional. Build it into your time, just like the fourth commandment encourages us to. Well, the next six are going to flow into human relationships. So the next five are flowing into human relationships. Give honour to your father and mother is not something which we throw at children to say, obey your father and mother. It is not particularly for children. It's particularly for adults, this commandment. And it doesn't say obey. It says honour. It says always be careful how we talk about our parents and make sure that we are not harming their reputation. Easy to badmouth our parents. All they did wrong with raising us up. The reason I'm like I am, it's not me. That's my parents.
It's too easy.
It is too easy. Quite right. So we are to honour their reputation. We can confront our parents privately about the things that have gone wrong. That is okay. That commandment doesn't cover that. But we honour them publicly. The only outlier to that is when there has been a case of abuse that has gone on, of a serious nature. That is something which is covered by our law and our avenues to pursue that. It doesn't say we don't follow those very serious things up. But generally, on a day-to-day basis, for most of us, we honour our parents. You're not to kill. This is something which generally there aren't any exceptions. Where there are exceptions, we're going to have disagreements about. There's many parts of the Old Testament law that does have a case law where it's not going to be simply a case of don't kill anyone. There are some difficult situations, which don't affect most of us, don't affect us all the time. Where it's not straightforward, those complex edges, we do need to give some thought to, and that's okay. The Old Testament doesn't have it as a blanket law. There are times when there is capital punishment, interestingly. So there are outliers. There are nowadays, for us, a few outliers. So for instance, war, where we're going to have to choose between the lesser of two evils. To be killed as a nation or not to be killed as a nation might be the situation before us. There'll be other difficult areas, such as abortion and assisted dying, when lesser of two evils. I don't know which it will be, we might say to ourselves, and we're going to have to think further. We are likely as Christians to disagree. And if we're all trying to follow this commandment well, we might have to respect differences in views on that one. You're not to commit adultery. We are to pursue a lifelong loyalty. And we practice that in our relationship with God, being always loyal to Him. We ground that in a loyalty to one another within a marriage relationship. So that won't be for everyone. Those who are not married and live a life of celibacy, that one won't apply. But that life of loyalty towards another is to be pursued. As Jesus reminds us, not just outwardly, but in our minds and our thinking as well, staying loyal. That's difficult. 7-year itch, 2-year itch, 1-year itch. We practice loyalty within our relationships. When the going gets tough, we build up muscles of loyalty towards God as well, and towards others who we have friendships with. Don't steal. Stealing disrupts relationships. The Lord gives graciously, so no need to try and take from others. You're to give, not to give a lying testimony against your neighbour. This was fundamental to their legal system. You were convicted in the ancient Near East, which was a set in Jewish society. The legal system relied on people giving truthful witness. If two people came with an accusation, you could be convicted. Similarly, nowadays, our legal system relies on people telling the truth and not falsifying it. So that is the basis of a good legal system within a country, a just system. So you don't lie in court. We extend that to everyday lives as well, that what we say, our yes should be a yes, and no should be a no, in every circumstance. First of all, the odd commandment, the odd one which you can't legislate for, the odd one where it means that the commandments of God are for our mind as well and for our emotions. I mean, this is a driving thing. If you start to desire the house of your neighbor, their slaves, their wife, their car, their job, their everything, you're going to start wanting to steal, commit adultery, and maybe even kill if you want to get rid of them. I mean, it starts to feed into everything else. But it's a command to watch over everything you desire as well. What liberty if we get this one right. Can you imagine what it does to consumerism? You should be consuming more of the world's resources. You should be having more. You should be living with that sense of discontent that makes you want to buy this product which you don't really need. I'm fine, actually. I'm actually fine with what I've got because I've got God, His life within me. He is my friend. I'm saved by God. And do you know, I'm content. I'm really good with that. I don't need anything else as a supplement or anything else to get in the way. So I'm fine. No, thank you. off you go with your offer, whatever it is. Can you imagine how that would undermine so much of what we are driven by? It sets us free to live in contentment with our God. 10th commandment given for our liberty. Let's pursue it. Think of the change that it could make. So as we come to those commandments, an antiquated set of rules meant to keep you down, I think they're liberty for us, a liberty for Christians, which Jesus summarized, but that's what he's summarizing. One particular commandment there that's for you, which one this morning is there for you to put more emphasis on, to put more effort into, to think through further for yourself and how it applies to you. Which one? Choose a number, 1 to 10. Lock it in. Remember it, using these if you need to. Lock it in and pursue that over the coming weeks. Commandment for you. Let's pray together. Father God, we take your word. We take your commandment for us this morning. We thank you for the liberty that your commandments bring. We confess before you there's one particular one we got here, which we've not been pursuing enough, and we need to pursue more. Help us to do that. Send your spirit among us. Empower us. Remind us, Lord. Pursue us so that we pursue your word for us. Thank you, Lord. Amen. Let's worship together in a song.
Thank you for that, David. Let's stand together. I think we're just going to sing about a bit of music for a little bit. Let's start singing this song and let's our worship and our praise, our gratitude come before the living God.